So basically, we gathered up all the information we needed for 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9, resentment-wise, through that little inventory sheet yesterday. Today, we're going to continue the same process. We're going to look at our fears this morning. We're going to look at our past sex life this morning. We're going to look at harms we've done to people other than just sexually. And we're going to follow the same identical procedure that we used for resentment, Joe.
Let's go to page 18 before we talk too much about those fears. We're going to do what the book says. We're simply going to find the facts, and we're going to face the facts, and then we're going to engage in a process so we can accept the facts. As Charlie said yesterday, we reiterate this morning, we're not going to psychoanalyze ourselves. We're not going to say that the reason we have these fears is because Mama put us on the potty chair backwards or something. We're not going to do that kind of thing. We're just going to find the facts and face the facts and engage in a process so we can accept the facts. And we read yesterday, he said, when the spiritual malady is overcome, which may not mentally and physically, the spiritual malady. Spiritual not only means my relationship with God, but it means my own internal feelings about things, the spiritual, my spirit of myself. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. And we're going to look at these ideas, emotions, and attitudes, Dr. Yun Tho wrote, which were the guiding force of the lives of these people. And I'm going to go back here and read this page 18, because this one paragraph really tells my whole story. He says, an illness of this sort, and we've come to believe it an illness, involves those about us in a way no other human sickness can. If a person has cancer, all are sorry for him, and no one is angry or hurt. But not so with the alcoholic illness. For with it goes annihilation of all things worthwhile in life. It engulfs all whose lives touch the sufferers. It brings misunderstanding, fierce resentment, financial insecurity, disgusted friends and employers, warped lives of blameless children, sad wives and parents, and anyone can increase the list. In other words, alcoholism is a family illness. It affects everybody in the family to some degree. And if you live with one of us very long, you're going to be affected by it. That's a fact. And I go back into my life, and I know today that my dad was an alcoholic. I didn't know that at the time. He had an obsession to drink. And my mother had an obsession to see that he didn't drink. It seemed like every time my dad took a drink, my mother's personality changed. And I grew up in this. And my dad ended up in West Tulsa. He was we lived on a farm back in the late 30s, and we couldn't make it there anymore. We came to California, didn't make it out here very well, and we went back to Oklahoma. And my dad ended up in West Tulsa, which is the wrong side of the tracks, of course. And Charlie lived over there, too, Garden City. But my dad got a job as an ice man, and he was hauling ice to people's houses to stock their refrigerators with 6 days a week. Back-breaking work, hauling that ice upstairs and wherever you needed to go with it. And he'd get off work on Saturday evening, and he'd go down by the bootlegger and pick up a pint of that whiskey, homemade whiskey we had back there, and spend a dollar for it. Now, I believe this today. My daddy needed a drink after back-breaking work. He deserved a drink, and he ought to have a drink, I think. But my mother saw that dollar going for that booze. It could have gone for feeding of these 5 kids that they had. And she raised hell with my dad about his drinking. Well, naturally, he continued to drink, and we know that alcoholism is a progressive illness. And as time went by, he got sicker and sicker, and she got sicker and sicker, and the fights got worse and worse, and I grew up in this, and I was affected by it emotionally. My dad, from time to time, would pull out a gun or a knife and threaten my mother and us kids with it, talk verbally abusive to us, and eventually he got real bad. He got to where he'd tell us kids that he was taking our mother out this weekend and he was going to kill her. And they'd be gone all weekend from Friday or whatever until late Sunday night. And I'm sitting at home wondering, is he going to do that this time? I'm, you know, biting my fingernails. I'm worried about it, as any kid would. And he got real bad with his drinking. And she had to have him committed to Eastern State Hospital in Bonita, which is our local nut house. And they didn't have any alcoholic treatment wards in those days. What they did have is a criminally insane ward. And that's what they did with alcoholics in 1949 and 50, 51. They put them in the criminally insane ward, and they would stay there. They got well. Think about that. And my dad was up there for 3 years and 7 months and 13 days, and he was an alcoholic. And my little brother and I used to hitchhike up there, take him a couple of dollars and a carton of cigarettes from time to time. And they would let us go back into that criminally insane ward on Building 6. And I saw things back there that absolutely nobody's supposed to see. And I'm just 7, 8, 9 years old, the most formidable years of my life. And I began to get some ideas, emotions, and attitudes which would become the guiding force of my life about this time. And one of them was this. I said, if God, and I got to blame it on somebody, right? If God is going to do this to me and to us, then to hell with him. I'll never be talking to him anymore. Thank you. And another thought came to me was, if it feels like this and hurts this bad to love people, I'm going to quit loving people. It hurts too bad. So I began to push people out of my life. And another thought came to me was this. If anything good is going to happen in my life, it's going to happen because I, all along, without any help, made it that way. So I didn't need God, nothing, or nobody. Thank you. And I lived my life that way. And if you threatened me, or if I perceived a threat from you, it was not good for you. I'm telling you. And they put you in jail for those kind of attitudes, by the way, which they did for me. And I got arrested over there in Arizona a long time ago and convicted to go to prison. I was 15 years old. Finally got out of there as a aggravated assault. If the guy had died, you wouldn't have another speaker here this morning, I can tell you that. And not very good coping skills either, by the way. They put you in jail for that. They divorce you for those kinds of things, and you have trouble, which I did have plenty of it. But I thought those were very brave attitudes on my part for a long, long time, even after an Alcoholics Anonymous, because that's the way I'd always lived. I didn't need God, nothing, or nobody. Thought that was brave. Come to find out after inventory is probably the most fearful ideas, emotions, and attitudes that anybody could possibly have, and I had them all, and I did not know it because I'd had them since I was real young. So I was, as they said, thank God for the inventory process. I'm simply going to look at the facts and face the facts and engage in the process so I can accept the facts. A lot of people would have us to believe we can just run around accepting things up front. I can't. I just can't do that. I have to engage in the process. And acceptance is a process that we go through. And looking at the inventory process is the beginning of it. So now, if you don't mind, let's go back to page 67. Talk about fears. And again, we're not going to psychoanalyze ourselves and say that the reason we have it is because mama put us on the potty chair backwards. We're simply going to face the facts here. He said, notice that the word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Miss Jones, the employer, and the wife. This short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. But did not we ourselves set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think that fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. And we reviewed our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper even though we had no resentment or connection with them. We asked ourselves why we had them. Wasn't it because that self-reliance failed? See, I didn't need God, nothing, or nobody. I was totally self-reliant upon me. Self-reliant was good as far as it went, but it didn't go far enough. Some of us once had great self-confidence, but didn't fully solve the fear problem or any other when it made us cocky. It was worse.
Okay, in that last paragraph that Joe read, we're going to see basically the same kind of instructions to review our fears as we had for resentments. So to avoid any confusion whatsoever, we made up another little inventory sheet. We called it a review of fears. And let's take a look at it for just a few minutes. On that inventory sheet in column one, just like we did with the resentments, we made a list of those things that we fear. Who or what do I fear? Now, we men, we have a little problem with this to start with because we say we're tough, we're macho, we don't have very many fears. But actually, I think if we really carefully look at things, we're going to find that all of us have many, many fears. We all have fears connected with our marriages. We have fears connected with our children. We have fears connected with the Internal Revenue Service. We have fears connected with the police department. We have fears connected with. We can sit here and name literally hundreds of fears that human beings have. I did the same thing in listing the fears I did with resentments. I didn't think I had very many fears. And then when I started putting them down on paper, I began to fill out sheet after sheet after sheet. I began to realize how much fear I really do have. I made a decision in step three to let God direct my thinking. And if I have that many fears, then those fears direct my thinking, just like resentments directed my thinking also. They block me off from the sunlight of the Spirit. I don't think we'll ever realize how much fear we've got and they'll put them all down on a sheet of paper. You can only see one fear at a time in your head, period. But if you start listening on those sheets of paper, you begin to realize how much fear we really do have.